Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Eric Wetterling, aka the Hedgeless Horseman. And Eric is well known on our site, also at CEO.ca. Eric's very active on Twitter and on other forums. So definitely check out the link below this to go to Eric's site. But Eric, it's always great getting you on the show just to get your thoughts on the precious metals market. And we were talking a little bit off mic that despite the fact that gold's having a good close today for the month and the quarter, and it's nice to see higher metals prices, and despite the macro factors in the background, you really don't put much focus on that when you're looking at companies and when you're investing. You mentioned to me that you invest like it's a bear market at all times, and that if the gold price goes higher or if the macro factors line up, then that's just the icing on the cake for you. But you're looking at this on a company valuation basis. I'd love you to maybe start there and just expand on how you don't really focus on the macro, you focus on the micro.
Yeah, I mean, it began, you know, X amount of years ago when, you know, started reading up on the debt bubble, et cetera, and you get the, you know, start to get the history of money, et cetera. And you know that, I mean, it was pretty obvious that this fiat system, like all fiat systems before, have failed. And the things were getting worse and worse, more money printing. So I think it didn't take too long to like figure out that, okay, gold and silver are probably going to be the best risk reward bets, you know, the next decade, let's say. And then I, you know, let that be pretty much. I don't listen or read up too much about the merits of gold or what M1 or M2 is doing or whatever, you know, 1,000 different macro reasons that you can make a 40-page report why gold should go higher, etc. It's like, that's pointless. I mean, in my opinion, I can't do much with that. I know my conviction has that gold will be in a bull until, you know, we get a reset of some sort. So then I just immediately jumped into the companies, because that's, in my opinion, where the, you know, real edge is. Because I mean, if you're picking good companies, you should be able to, on average, do quite well in a bear market, at least lose less than the, let's say, macro traders who get the timing wrong. Because, I mean, I expected this fiat system to be basically dead by now. So it's like my timing was way off. I mean, but at the same time, it's like if you just focus on picking companies, pick companies like it's a bear market. And then, well, you know, the upside in gold, et cetera, becomes a surprise. So that's why I've also said that, you know, I'm bullish until this system is, you know, longer the system we are used to. So I think that's just, you know, simply the best risk reward. And I think that 95% of stuff out there is like complete noise. I mean, because first of all, if you're right on a stock, that's like, again, you can do well in a neutral market. You can do well even in a poor gold market. You can do really well in a good gold market. So I think it's just, you know, make the strategy as simple as possible. Focus on the value creation and let the other things just play out in the pace that they will.
Well, now, some people may push back on the idea, Eric, and say, hey, that's great to invest like it's a bear market. But if it actually is a bear market in a macro sense, like it was for the last 2 years, basically since the highs in the summer of 2020, then you run the risk of jumping into these companies and watching them go lower and lower, or buying a company that you think is a good value and watching it go lower. What would you say to that response from people that would say, hey, I'd rather wait to see it turn higher on a macro level before getting in?
Yeah, I mean, of course, in an ideal world, I would have the perfect timing, basically. Like now, for example, I mean, it was just a few months ago when people were bashing me like, yeah, you said, you know, buy for the last whatever, 18 months. And now I'm saying even more no-brainer buy. So I've been saying no-brainer buy since, let's say, at least 6 months, whatever. It's like, yes, in my opinion, they have been no-brainer buys. But now all of a sudden, when we're off the lows, and it looks like, I mean, Newmont is doing a 35-year consolidation breakout. All-time high set in 1987, and we're just, it appears we're for the first time closing above that level things stand. So that's like, you know, monumental thing. I mean, NASDAQ, it took 16 years to get back to the 2000 high, but once it did, I mean, that's up, what, 200-300% since 2016. So, I mean, I think these are monumental shifts we're looking at, because if the largest gold miner is doing a breakout from a 35-year-old long consolidation. It's like that's the start of something major. That's the start of the real mining bull, I think, in gold. So, I mean, that's all I need to know. So having my conviction, and since I'm a value investor, I'll just scream buy even louder when it gets cheap. Again, it's like you look like an idiot. You're saying buy when it's low. And now all of a sudden it's like, yeah, okay, they went up. It's like, yeah, you know, that's what I've been saying. It's like, it's going to change because nothing has changed. I just find it funny. Like, I mean, I think I'm in that way a bit boring because I have a very simple strategy. But there's a bunch of people in gold we trust, guys, you know, a 40-page report about, you know, all the macroeconomics that know a lot more than me about, you know, M1 or M2 and the gold divided by the... In my opinion, it's like focus on the micro and just know that, I mean, this mathematically is destined to fail because it, first of all, always has. Every fiat money has died. So it's like, that's enough for me. I left, you know, studying gold and silver, etc., a year after I started digging into it, or a few years, because, okay, there's not much more to be gained by researching why gold should go higher because it's obvious that it will. And then I just went, you know, 100% into companies. And that's why I'm saying, you know, buy when they're cheap. Don't look too much at, you know, gold or silver or whatever. So that's why I feel like I'm repeating myself a lot of the time because my strategy is very simple. But at the same time, I think, I don't know, you know, you get clicks from like some headline about, you know, everything is going to shit or whatever. It's like, you know, these are the macro reasons, whatever. It's like, hey, if we end up in a raging gold bull, I'm happier, but I'm investing like it's a permanent bear market pretty much. And then, you know, a rising gold price, etc., will be simply, you know, a bonus. So I don't know, it's just a bit weird. I mean, to me, there's so much, way too much information. And I think like 90% of it is kind of worthless if you're actually an investor. Because first of all, I mean, we've been macro tourists, whatever, been wrong since I don't know how many years. But if you are stuck to actually trying to pick the best companies, I mean, you would lose less in a bear, you would make more in a bull. So it's like, for me, it's the no-brainer risk reward to focus on the companies. And just, you know, go from there, and then the, you know, ships will fall where they may. But yeah, I don't know. It's just weird because, I mean, you see the same messaging all the time. And I know some people say the same, that, yeah, we know it's, you know, gold should go higher, gold should go higher, etc. And of course, you have to have a new conclusion or whatever it's like every day. I mean, it's probably in the last 1 or 2 years that I've really started to appreciate just how important sentiment is. Well, not, I wouldn't say perhaps important, but how impactful it is, that it runs the whole damn show, basically. That, okay, again, you can have good news, but if the sentiment is poor, it goes down, so it's like a rigged game against you. But when it gets better, it's like rigged for you, so a company can go up on no news, on even poor news, etc. But at the end of the day, that's the voting machine, basically. And I mean, so far, I've just kept doing what I've been doing. It's like, I don't invest in GDX. I don't invest in GDXJ. I pick companies. So they're all different to the indices, etc. I mean, there are companies out there that puts out news releases that, you know, hikes up the implied value of 30% and the stock does nothing. But that 30% is going to, you know, show one day in the price of the stock when sentiment gets better. So it's like, yeah, it's frustrating to see an unwarranted downtrend in the average junior for like 2 years. But at the same time, you have no idea when it's bottoming. And if you can pick up stuff that, let's say, has gone down 60% while intrinsic value might have gone up 50 or 100%, that's painting a very, very good future picture in terms of expected returns in that stock. So it's like, I'm just like I've always done. When the price to value gap increases, I just load up even more and try to find the companies where the, you know, price to value gap is the best. Or, I mean, there's a bunch of other factors to that as well. So yes, I understand it's frustrating, but I mean, if this was so easy, let's say, everybody would do it, but almost everyone is a momentum trader. And the people that are complaining are typically the ones who bought high, followed, you know, the downtrend down, and have no idea what's happening next because they've never actually bought a bottom and seen the uptrend. So it's like, I think a lot of whining tells you a lot about the history of said investor. Because yes, to me it's frustrating, but I've seen this movie like 2-3 times before, and I know it always changes, and I know that as long as I don't sell cheap, things tend to turn out well.
That's a good point, Eric, and yeah, I think the whining is a good indicator, like sentiment. It ties into sentiment that as the whining gets louder and louder, I know that we're getting closer to a bottom, so I actually get more interested in buying the louder the whining gets. But let's talk about some of the stocks that you're looking at recently that you think still represent good value creation. Maybe they're doing good work, putting out good news, and maybe the market hasn't woken up to them yet, or maybe they're not trading at the valuation you see them going to. Are there a couple companies that come to mind?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a bunch. I could, you know, probably list like 30 names. One or two that I'm really focused on right now are two exploration stories. One, I mean, I've discussed these two before, one being Elora Resources. And I think right now it's at a very interesting point because it's like at the ceiling of a 1 year long consolidation box, pretty much. And there's someone who's bidding everything at $5.25 per share. So it's like, if you look at the hourly, et cetera, it's like a cement floor, and that's just below the breakout point. And I've seen there's, in my opinion, a pretty obvious basher in the forum, et cetera. So I don't know if that's perhaps a guy covering his short because he's afraid of the breakup, or if that's someone who's, for whatever reason, is afraid it's going to break higher. But I love Elora. There's no perfect case. I mean, there's always going to be risks, etc. But at the end of the day, which, you know, most bashers don't tend to factor in, is like, what are you paying for it? Is there a guarantee that Iskaiska will be a world-class system? No, but it's not, you know, at all priced in. That's why I like it. If Elora was trading at $1 to $2 billion right now, that would be a completely different discussion. So that's one. I own a lot of shares of it, so it's like, consider me biased, and they are a sponsor. The other one is Goliath Resources, which put out a news release today, basically suggesting that the Surebet zone might continue even deeper than they thought because there's an intrusion that pops up at depth. And the fear, let's say, was that it might be a post-mineralization intrusion that basically cuts off or, you know, removed the Surebet zone at depth. But now it appears that it might actually be the source of the mineralization in the Surebet zone. So it might actually continue farther than we probably hoped for or dared to hope for. So I like that very much because I think that drill story that could be one of the most bang for the buck drill stories going forward. But other than that, I mean, there's a bunch of juniors. I talked to Defiant Silver recently, also a holding and a sponsor. We're waiting for assay results from their Lucita target in their Senna Casio project. And I mean, they are really a company that does not put out news releases for news releases sake. So I think that's been like intriguingly boring. And in this case, I think it's actually a good thing because, of course, it limits expectations. And they have a gold copper project as well. So from a risk reward perspective, I like that more in, you know, my longer term HODL portfolios I help manage because, you know, they have gold, copper and silver in the ground. Whereas in Elora's and Goliath's case, they're more, you know, high octane growth stories. So they can create a lot of value. Those two companies probably, I wouldn't be surprised if they were my two biggest winners this year, actually. But there's always risk. Nothing is guaranteed. It's just if they have what I hope they have, they could also prove that up really quickly because we can compare that to a story like Osisko Mining, where they, you know, it took them 1 million meters of drilling to prove up like what was it, 4 million ounces of something on the books. And I think Goliath could infer at least, let's say, 3 million ounces or more if we're lucky from just this coming drill campaign. So that's a very, in my opinion, interesting quirk that, you know, exploration stories can differ incredibly in terms of rate of return and ROI on drilling, even though at surface it looks like, yeah, okay, they have a multi-million ounce potential and that other company does as well, but one company would require like, you know, five times the amount of drilling, etc. So they can differ widely, even though they might appear to the, you know, untrained eye to be quite similar. But that's a topic for another day, I guess. It's just, you know, why investing is an art, not a science.
I think those are some good company recommendations for people to do some homework on and do their own due diligence. But you make a good point, how quickly a company can rack up ounces in the ground, basically how successful they are at building value with the drill bit, can vary a lot from company to company. So just looking at the amount of meters drilled isn't a good indicator, because not all deposits are equal and not all exploration teams are equal. So some great points there on Aloro, Goliath, and Defiance. And we always appreciate having you on the show, Eric, to talk to us about some of the companies you're watching and just the way you invest and the way you're approaching the junior mining speculation. So thanks for sharing some time with us here at the KE Report, and looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you, Chad. And remember, again, I can't guarantee anything. I'm, you know, bullish these stocks, so I'm biased. They're sponsors, and, you know, not every stock will pay off, but the hopes is that, you know, some will pay off bigly and pay for all the rest.